specific to grade, that's just, that's their, it's mainly, yeah, their general fund portion.
Four billion? You can afford it.
Call this meeting of the Senate Transportation Committee to order. Let the record show that it's February 15th and it's 1 o'clock. Today we'll be having an overview of the governor's budget on transportation, hot off the presses. We just got it here actually about 5 minutes ago. We appreciate that and appreciate your quickness in preparing for this meeting, giving us that overview. And I think we'll start out with Deputy Commissioner Arsenault. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Good afternoon. We're here today to provide some background on the MnDOT budget. We'll be doing a little tag teaming today. Myself, Tim Hinkle, and Rick Jonas will be presenting to you today. And then tomorrow, I believe it's Thursday. We will be having a couple other individuals here as well. So we're glad to be here. And we have got, again, I'm Bernie Arsenault, Deputy Commissioner for Minnesota DOT. You've got a couple of handouts that should be at your desk. One is the agency profile that talks about MnDOT in some depth, and it goes through our different programs. And then you've also got the handout from the PowerPoint that we intend on going through today. So unless there's any opening questions, I'd be happy to just start through.
Plan on going ahead.
Great.
Mr. Arsenault.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Oops. Okay, as I mentioned, I'm going to talk a little bit about the MnDOT overview. So I'll be covering kind of at a maybe a 50,000-foot elevation our system, how big it is, some of the dollars associated with that. And then we'll be getting into quite a bit more depth into the transit area, some of the other modes, in fact, all the other modes, and also the state aid system. First off, I'd like to talk a little bit about the change items that occurred today or were included today in the governor's budget. The first is that we had an increase in order to cover the additional federal funds that we received, so we need an appropriations increase, both for not only some federal funds that include just some additional dollars from earmarks or formerly earmarks, and then the August redistribution. And then with our state planning and research, we also got additional funds, and so we need the appropriation to move forward with that. We did also request a change of $130,000 to fund two positions to manage the state targeted group business program that's part of our DBE and workforce collaborative. One of the there's some legislation moving forward on that. Also our ARMOR, that's the Allied Radio Matrix for Emergency Response, Maintenance and Operations. We've asked for additional funding in that area. General fund reduction, we did look at a 5% reduction across our general fund portions of our budget. That's through the modes, most importantly. And then also there was an 8.3% reduction to the transit grants, and that is a significant amount, about 1.3. And that, again, matches the MIC Council's reduction in that area. And finally, after the February forecast, we will be coming back to talk more about the Better Roads program, and there may be some additional needs with that. So in terms of a scope for today, when you look at the FY 12 and 13 biennium, our total budget is about $5.146 billion. That's bringing in all the dollars that flow through or are spent by MnDOT. We've got about 4,975 employees, but we have utilized the ERI, the Early Retirement Incentive, that was passed last year through the legislature, and we will have about 485 people taking advantage of that early retirement. At MnDOT, We look to make that a net zero, so we've asked people to hold positions open. And furthermore, we did, through different initiatives like Lean, looking at more efficient ways of doing business, reorganizations, some job where we combine services, we're reducing in the neighborhood of 50 to 55 positions. And so we're looking at an overall net savings at MnDOT as a result of that early retirement incentive. And then what I'd like to do now is move towards the state retirement system and walk through that. State transportation system. And we're going to go through the different areas, and then I'll hand it off to Tim, and he will take over with the transit area.
Mr. Arsenal, we have a number of senators that would like to ask questions as we go.
Okay.
Senator Perry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Arsenal, going back to that, you have 485 that took the early out. They're retiring. Now, you mentioned another, 50 or so through the lean. And is that on top of the 485, so it would be 500 and some employees?
Mr. Arsenal?
Mr. Chair, Senator Perry, thank you for allowing me to clarify that. We've received 485 applications for that have been approved for that early retirement. Of the 485, about 50 or 55 we will not be refilling. So we'll only be refilling, 425 or 30 or so in that area. So it is those 50 positions that are a net savings for the agency.
Follow up.
Senator Perry?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, but you also said you are asking at this point to leave those positions open, and if so, how long of a period of time are you asking for that?
Mr. Arsenal.
Mr. Chair and Senator Perry, those 53 we have no plans at this time to refill. What we've done is for the 400 plus that are retiring, we've asked our offices where possible, and this isn't true in all cases, but to try and hold those positions open to cover that incentive. The incentive that was associated with that, the two-year health care savings.
Senator Hall?
Well, Mr. Chair, and I've just got a question with that. I'm just wondering what the rationale, I know what the rationale is there, but if we're looking for workforce reduction, you're taking and you're going to refill, you're just holding those open until you get a net zero. So there's no savings, it's just once you get to the net zero, then we're going to refill those. I'm just wondering why we wouldn't be focusing on actually not replacing them and actually having a cost savings. And, I remember, interviewing for a job one time and having, asking for the same amount of vacation that I had left from my previous job. And the person said, if I can do without you for a month, I can do without you for the other 11 months too. So I'm just wondering if we're holding open positions and we had 485 people and we're going to try and manage through that, we should be able to have, I'm just thinking, somewhere better than a 55% net reduction. So if you'd like to speak to that.
Mr. Arsenal?
Mr. Chair, Senator Howe, sure. We did ask all of our offices to look at ways to streamline. This is, 10% of our, essentially 10% of our workforce is a pretty big hit. And we've done some restructuring where we could. We've looked at a different way of providing services. We have asked the offices in all cases, we have at least attempted to try and cover that through holding that position open. We're at a time right now where, depending on what area of our work you're in for example, in the case of delivering construction projects, we've got a little bit of ability to hold some positions open right now. We're attempting in every case to try and not fill these positions, but we still have a $1 billion program that we're trying to deliver along with the maintenance and that. And we continue to look for innovative ways to deliver the transportation system, and we don't quit looking to reduce our workforce, but this initial run through, we have reduced 50-some positions, and as I said, we'll continue to look for ways to streamline the way we deliver this system.
Mr. Chair, just to follow up.
Senator Hall.
Mr. Chair, you know, what we're looking at then is just roughly over a 1% actual reduction when you get done with it. And I guess, you know, so many businesses are focused on retention, you know, because you've got that knowledge base and you're going to have to retrain all these 425 workers that you're going to bring on board. You know, I'm sure you've done the math, and I'm just I guess when we look at early retirement programs, we're looking for workforce reductions and not filling those. It's certainly, you know, I came from the County Health and Human Services Board, and when we look at encouraging retirement, we're trying not to fill those positions and actually look at reductions. So I guess I would just suggest that, you know, when we look at a retirement incentive, I know there is some benefit with filling it with somebody at a lower level or a lower lower on the pay range, so to speak. But eventually they're going to get back up to the top of the pay scale. Hopefully they will, because you want to retain those with that knowledge. So I guess maybe it's more of a comment than a question, but I'm sure we'll talk about it more. Thanks.
Mr. Arsenal?
Mr. Chair and Senator Howe, you're absolutely right. And one of the areas that we are saving is because we're bringing people in on the lower end. And that is true. They're eventually going to get they're going to rise to higher income levels through the contract process. I will tell you that our initial calculations show about, you know, for the first year or two, about a $10,000 savings per retiree. So there is a net savings. When I talked about the net zero, we're asking our offices each to make sure that they're covering that incentive. We would be glad to speak to you more about the details of this if you'd like.
And Mr. Arsenal, could you talk a little bit about the mechanism that you either have on the division level or within the districts? Is there some way that you review every opening and potential fill of that opening? Like our small businesses have had to do, they look intensely prior to actually making that hire at where they can possibly incorporate it into other positions. Is that process available, and is it being actively used in MnDOT?
Yes, Mr. Chair. We, up until just very recently, we brought all hires to the division level and reviewed them together. As a matter of efficiencies, we have now delegated that to the division directors. So it comes right up to the MnDOT leadership team, and each of the division directors is required to look at these positions to make that determination whether or not these are essential positions to fill. And their charge is to look at them for ways to reduce our overall workforce. And furthermore, there are some outcomes of this exercise that have completely restructured some of our divisions. And that is the way that you can reduce in a sustainable way some of these positions. But it's just not always, it doesn't always apply in all areas. But I can cite one of our divisions is doing some significant reorganizations. I can cite one of our offices, the Office of Traffic Engineering, has changed the way they're doing work. They've delegated some out, built some efficiencies in, and they've removed one of the functions that they used to do. So there are examples like that throughout these 485.
Mr. Chair. Good to hear. Senator Lilly.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Arsenal, just simple question. On your second bullet point, it says 485 fewer than in 2001. Is that 2010 or 2001?
No, that's actually 2001. And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I noticed that I have my wrong handouts here, so all my notes are gone. But I can still do this, no problem. What I misdescribed here is that this is 485 fewer, so I was just talking apples and oranges, and I'm sure that MnDOT staff back here was busy thinking, how can they let me know this? But it's 485 fewer from the what we had over 5,000, 5,400. The actual number of ERI that we are losing now is about 415, and of the 415, we have reduced about 53. I apologize for that confusion.
Thank you for the clarification. Follow-up, Senator Lilly?
No.
Senator Perry?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Arsenal, so 415. Two questions. Yeah, that's a sizable number that took the early out, obviously. Do you have a breakout of what positions? I'm sure you do, that maybe you could provide for us, from secretarial or back off, however they're broke out. And with that in mind, when you have that size of retirees, is now the time, or have you within the department been looking at, maybe we have too many districts in the state, and maybe now is the time to reduce the amount of districts and reposition the state as far as where the actual development is happening with new roads and that? Because I've always thought that 8 districts seems to be quite a few for the type of activity that's done, and I'm just wondering, has any of that been discussed at all, that maybe 3 districts might not better serve the state?
Mr. Arsenal?
Mr. Chair, Senator Perry, first of all, we can get you that breakdown.
Okay,
we'll do
you.
That. And it is a pretty good cross-section of, in terms of the retirements of MnDOT. Relative to your question regarding the districts, this is one of those issues that we've examined periodically over the years that I've been at the department, and I think it is prudent to make sure that stays on our radar screen. Technology is certainly different today than it was just 5 years ago, and so we are considering that. Now, one of the things I will tell you, though, is as we do that, there's a counter to that, and these areas across the state are very diverse, and that representation is important to those communities. We still believe that it is prudent for us to make sure that we're looking at that regularly.
Thank you.
Senator Sita?
Mr. Chair, without creating a lot of work for the department, and then follow up to Senator Perry's question, I was just thinking, is there any way to look at data to compare jobs that are now unfilled, perhaps compared to 2001, and the increased amount that the department has had to outsource or issue contracts to different groups or different organizations, that because you don't have state employees filling those positions, how you've had to do increased contracting, and any net savings or net costs associated with that? I just thought that would be interesting to parlay with Senator Perry's point.
Mr. Arsenal?
Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, we are really working hard to determine the level of deliverables that MnDOT actually does. And I'm not talking in terms of construction program, but rather, how much do we design and administer through the construction project or process. And so we have been working really hard of late to try and identify what is that right level. And we do need to use the private sector to help us with the peaks, things like ARA and such, as we deliver the projects to improve the system. The other thing that is keeping us diligent in that area is the Taxpayers Accountability Act, and making sure that we're looking, what is the most efficient way for us to spend dollars? Is it to outsource, or is it to do it internally? And finally, we've begun to look at this whole issue from a risk-based perspective, and determining, there are some low-risk activities that we do that may make more sense for us to outsource, and then there are higher-risk projects that we do that may make more sense for us to do internally. So we're working hard to do that. I wouldn't say we're there yet, but we're in the process of looking at it.
Thank you, Mr. Arsenal.
Okay, Mr. Chair, thank you. Excuse me. And I apologize again for those number errors last time. So now, very quickly, I'd like to just go over the system itself, talk about the size of the system, and how MnDOT touches each of these areas. First of all, there are 141,000 plus miles of roadway in Minnesota. That includes all levels of roadways, from the 12,000 or so miles of trunk highway, about 45,000 miles of county state aid highway and county roads, 22,000 municipal, and then 62,000 miles of township roads that serve a pretty important purpose, especially for the farm to market. We have a whole bunch of vehicle miles that are traveled on those roads, and they serve a great function in Minnesota. We also count our bridges 20 feet and more. Excuse me. There are about 13,000 bridges in Minnesota. 3,600 of those plus are on trunk highways. We also have 135 airports in Minnesota, including seven metropolitan airports, and one airport that we share with Canada. In the water freight area, you can see that we ship over 53 million tons. We have public ports in Duluth, Winona, Red Wing, St. Paul, and Minneapolis. We also manage the rail freight system through grants, and that is 232 million tons shipped in 2008, a whole bunch of miles of track, and 22 railroad companies. Thank you. Oh, thank you very much. I'm not emotional.
Well, we get emotional about this. If you don't.
I'm passionate about MnDOT. I'm just not emotional at this moment. Oh, thank you.
I'm gonna draw him now.
It's my lucky day. So in terms of transit, we see that transit plays a very important role in transportation in this state, where Met Council manages the transit system in the metro area. MnDOT manages the transit system in greater Minnesota, and 70 of our counties utilize public transit. Lots of trips on those, and there's 59 transit providers. And as you all know, this serves a really important role in serving the public in greater Minnesota. We also manage and work with the pedestrian and bicycle facilities throughout the state. I referred earlier to the agency profile, and this is broken down into our program structure, showing our agency management. This is where our corporate services lie. Our buildings are also identified through that. The multimodal area is where we talk about the four different modes, and Tim will be talking more about that in a bit. Our local road system is broken down again in more detail here, county state aid and municipal state aid roads. And then also, of course, the state roads, and that is our planning and delivery, operations and maintenance, the electronic communications, the armor program I talked about earlier, our debt service and state road construction. Just a quick briefing on the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. You've got, of course, the gas tax, the registration tax, and motor vehicle sales tax, and then other fees and such that fund the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. And it's broken down where 95% goes to trunk highways, county state aid, and municipal state aid in the percentages indicated. And then also we take 5% off of that as required for a flexible highway account for turnbacks and such, town roads, and town bridges. If you look at we're going to break down spending in a number of ways here. It'll always add up to the $5.14 billion. On state roads, it's about $2.7 billion. On local roads, it's about $1.8 billion. The modes, about $530 million. I'm sorry. And agency management is about $134 million. If you look by category, we've got local assistance, our capital program, construction projects, compensation, which would be salaries and such, operating costs, and then debt service transfers and other things like the Transportation Revolving Loan Fund. If you look at spending by fund, you see that the trunk highway, again, leads the pack, county state aid, and federal stimulus dollars play a big role, municipal state aid streets, transit assistance, state airports, general things, and then other funds, general fund. So the general fund is a relatively small portion of the trunk highway spending. If we look at our appropriation type, we've got the omnibus and the direct or omnibus, and that is actually what we're asking for appropriation authority on, the $4.161 billion. And then there's statutory appropriations, and then the open and standing, which are some of the cost of doing business for MnDOT. Some of our budget challenges, and here is the slide I was looking for earlier. The early retirement incentive. Each employee through this program receives 24 months of health and dental insurance, and that, of course, was passed in the last legislative session. We did offer it agency-wide. We did believe that this would be an opportunity for us to look for some opportunities for streamlining and reduction in our overhead. And as we talked about earlier, we did realize some of those reductions. I mentioned, so I had my numbers right, 415 employees were approved and accepted, and then 53 of those positions we have no intent to fill at this time. These are uncertain times. I'm sure you're all familiar with the fact that we are on a running continuing resolution with the federal the federal transportation law. Safety Lou expired in September of 2009. It's been temporarily extended 6 times since then through these continuing resolutions, and the current one will expire on March 4th, and we're looking forward to seeing exactly what will occur then. Obviously, these shorter extensions are much harder to manage through. The longer we can get, the easier it is for us to plan and make commitments on spending those dollars. In terms of agency services, this would be the management piece. We provide the departmental, or for the department leadership, manages our management, our financial services, our budget office, communications, help us with our transparency, the general administrative support, our HR office and workforce management things, looking at reducing workforce and such, and our IT services. Of course, we're governed under the Office of Enterprise Services in that area. And then the numbers are also shown there. So for our agency services, you can see our total compensation is about $67 million. Other operating expenses, about $29 million, for a total of $97 million. In terms of our agency management. Last area I'll be covering is buildings, and it may be a surprise that we actually own and operate 1,054 buildings, a lot of square feet. This is to manage the services that we provide. I mean, we have to have space for our vehicles. We have to have space for our people. We have a lot of pole buildings out there, a lot of truck stations. And some of those truck stations, by the way, are shared with local government. We've realized some significant efficiencies through those partnerships that are located throughout the state. Of course, we have to have buildings for our salt and other things associated with our operations. There's a lot of value in that, and it's important that we keep those in good condition in order to better serve the public and to be efficient with our dollars.
Mr. Arsenal, when you're partnering with a local unit of government and sharing a building, possibly a maintenance shop or some storage or something like that, is MnDOT compensated by that local unit of government for that?
Mr. Chair, what we typically do is work through and under the unique circumstances of that partnership what makes sense for the local to provide and what makes sense for the state to provide. And we try and balance that out so that we're both participating to the extent that we should based on our utilization of that service. So it's not like a boilerplate approach. I know that when I was an area maintenance engineer, we did several of these, and they all looked a little different. But we do try and balance that and realize the efficiencies of one facility, one salt area, where we might divide it off a little differently. But there's different ways of managing that.
So, in other words, what you're saying is that no cash generally changes hands. It's a working agreement that simply benefits both parties?
Mr. Chair, you know, there's, in terms of purchasing part of the building or maybe the pavement in the parking lot, you know, there is certainly cash flow, but, you know, I think I would ask our buildings manager to come and respond to that in more detail if you'd like.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you. At this point. Mr. Orson?
Mr. Chair and committee, so if we look at then the breakdown in terms of category, and we have about $37 million that we're spending over the biennium on our buildings. That's operating them, and it's not, you know, building them, but it's operating them and managing them and upgrading them. So with that, unless there are any other general questions, Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Tim Hinkle, our director of our MODES division, who would talk more now, starting with the transit area.
Move that computer over here.
Mr. Hinkle, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Tim Hinkle. I'm an assistant commissioner with MnDOT, responsible for the Modal Planning and Program Management Division of the department. I will continue MnDOT's briefing with an overview of the Modal Programs area. If you recall the presentation I gave a couple of weeks ago, it highlighted some of the modal offices. I will talk about the modal systems, the modal programs, and I would ask that you refer to your budget narrative as we go along, as it provides a little more detail than the PowerPoint slides will provide. You can go to page 18 of your budget narrative to be able to follow along with me. When you look at page 18, you can see that there are four budget activities that I will be highlighting in the modal programs, modal systems area. All of these areas provide support for transit, the freight, rail, and air services infrastructure that's owned and operated by local government and by the private sector. What's important to note here is that MnDOT is the administrator, and that we are a pass-through of funding to those others that are providing services in most cases for these modal program areas. So if you would then turn in your budget narratives to page 20, I will start with the first budget area, which is aeronautics, which is managed by Mr. Chris Roy in the Office of Aeronautics. What I'll do very quickly is just to cover the goals, cover the overall services provided, and then quickly cover the governor's recommendations regarding the appropriation levels for those areas. As you can see on page 20, the multimodal systems aeronautics activity enhances aviation safety and promotes aviation by providing educational, technical, and financial assistance to develop and maintain an air transportation system for Minnesota citizens. The services that are provided by the requested appropriation levels include the Aeronautics Administration, which covers areas like accounting, purchasing, inventory control, budget preparation, all of those items. It also covers air transportation operations, where we provide the air transportation services via state-owned aircraft to state employees, as well as the legislature, university personnel, and constitutional officers. Another service provided is the airport system and investment, system investment and planning. This is the activities that help us to provide technical, financial, and administrative assistance to publicly owned airports for aviation system planning, airport master planning, site selection, airport zoning, airspace issues. The list is fairly long there as you look through that. These appropriations will also provide for aviation system management, which furnishes the weather information systems, furnishes the equipment and person power necessary for repairs and maintenance of the navigational aids across the state, allows us to conduct the airport safety inspections, as well as the activities of licensing airports and commercial aviation operators. If you turn the page, the last activities include the traveler information that's provided to pilots, commercial airlines, etc., in the area of weather charts, navigational aids, flight safety seminars, etc. The appropriation levels that are being recommended in fiscal years 2012 and 13, respectively, are contained on page 23 of your budget narrative and on the PowerPoint slide that's before you. You can see that we are proposing equal levels of direct and statutory in both fiscal years 2012 and 2013 for a total of $194,280,000 for the biennium. The next slide gives you the overall spending plan for those appropriations levels in both fiscal year 2012 and 2013. You can see that overall the majority, 89%, of the spending will occur in the area of local assistance, which is the primary function of this office, to provide state and federal grants that go to the airports for providing the construction and maintenance activities. Then some of the smaller percentages include the other operating expenses, which is typically the overhead areas, including the buildings, facilities that aeronautics requires, computers, utilities, navigational aids that provide for safe travel and transport across the state. Total compensation, of course, is the salary and fringe benefits at approximately $7 million. And then other financial transactions for areas like the payout of the hangar revolving loan fund. This is a revolving loan fund that allows cities that have airports to construct hangar facilities through a loan program, which is then repaid to that loan program as can be accomplished. And then finally, the last spending item, the capital outlay and real property, is equated to the buildings, computers, utilities, et cetera, total of $194 million.
Senator Rust.
On the on the aeronautics pages, is the governor interested in changing the aircraft registration fee system, and is that reflected in the budget? I am, I might add.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rust, no, that change is not reflected in this budget request.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rust.
Mr. Hinkle, is the governor open to a different way that you know of?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rust, I'm not aware of any conversation with the governor yet on that particular request. So the answer is no at this point in time.
Okay.
Mr. Hinkle.
Mr. Chairman, I'll continue and move to the transit activity, which is on page 24 of your budget narrative. Again, looking at this activity description first, the transit activity will provide transportation alternatives to driving alone and allows people to live independently and participate fully in Minnesota's communities and economy. The goal remains, as it has been for a number of years, to provide this transit service to all parts of the state, to paint the state blue, so to speak, as was the original goal, and to have transit service in all counties, which, again, is not the case today. If you move to page 25, you get a quick summary of the specific transit services. They fall into four areas. The first is the transit system investment and planning. This is some of the bread and butter of this particular activity, which provides grants to the eligible recipients to operate public transit services in Greater Minnesota, as well as the planning activities that are associated with the grant administration. Second is the transit operations and maintenance, which includes activities that support the commuter bus projects, such as the service operation, the equipment, the station areas at park and rides, etc. Then we have the transit administration, which provides the budget for the staff within the office for management purposes, administration, support services, etc. And also within this budget area is the bicycle and pedestrian section, which works to safely include and link bicycle and pedestrian facilities in transportation projects, most often trunk highway projects, within MnDOT. If you turn to page 27 of your budget narrative, you can see the appropriation recommendation for fiscal years 2012 and 2013 at $15,724,000 respectively for direct appropriations in the respective fiscal years, and $132,763,000 in statutory in 2012, and a little bit more, $133,463,000 in fiscal year 2013. A total biennial recommendation of $297,674,000. Giving you a quick spending breakdown, you can see that the majority of this budget request and recommendation goes to the local assistance, again, which is the grant and aid program and administration across the state at 74% or $219 million. That goes to a number of programs. I don't know if Mike covered that, Mr. Schadauer, in his presentation last week, but this goes to a number of the programs like FTA Section 5310, 5311, 5316, all of those numbers he may have rattled off to get you familiar with where those local assistance activities are. The capital outlay and real property at $49 million, or approximately 16% of the spending, assisting with the Central Corridor LRT implementation activities and continued operation of the North Star Rail Project. Other operating expenses in the amount of approximately $16 million for continued work in the trunk highway side of things, in particular the bike and ped coordination activities. Total compensation in the amount of $11 million, which goes to compensation of staff, or support services, planning, and administration, and then other financial transactions in the amount of $2 million for reimbursements to people who travel to transit training sponsored by our Rural Transit Assistance Program. RTAP is the acronym that we use for that. Again, the total appropriation recommendation of $298 million.
Mr. Henkel? Could we back up just a little bit to the capital outlay and real property number of 49,318? You talked about North Star and Central Corridor. Could you break those out a little bit for us?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have the breakout, but we could certainly give those figures to you. I just don't have those in front of me. I don't know. Mike, we don't have them here, Mr. Chairman. We'll get those to you.
Thank you, Mr. Henkel. Senator Lilly?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Henkel, so looking at the full-time equivalents, we're currently at about 54, I see a number 54.6 and then 68.7. going to 63, but over 2010, that's about a 15% increase in full-time equivalents. What are the 15% increase in employees going to be doing, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Henkel?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lilly, I believe those are related to the ramp-up of work on the Central Corridor construction activities and the staffing that's necessary to provide for program project delivery in that particular case over the next 2 to 4 years, depending on the rollout of that construction activity.
Mr. Chair. Senator Lilly.
Mr. Chair, then does that mean that once that project is in place that we would go back to the previous levels? Is that the intention?
Mr. Chairman, that's Senator, right. that's correct, unless there's another project like the Southwest Metro LRT corridor that can make use of that and can provide the funding necessary to do so.
Senator Hall?
Mr. Chair, can you point out to me where our in this write-up where we can find what our commitment is as far as federal dollars are concerned, where we have to do a match?
Mr. Henkel?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Howe, I believe if you look at your budget narrative, page 27, and you look at the statutory appropriations area, which is towards the middle of your page, mm-hmm. you will find the federal funds expectations in each of the respective federal fiscal years. And so for federal, it would be 58.875 million in fiscal year 2012, Governor's Rec column, and the same for fiscal year 2013, as well as the line that talks about any federal stimulus funding, 8 million plus, 7.5 million in those respective columns.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Senator Hall.
So is that the federal dollars or is that our portion of the match?
Mr. Chairman. Senator, that is the federal dollars that are expected to be received in those federal fiscal years. The match is the state funds as well as any local assistance that's provided from local fare box collections or any other source that the locals would provide. And
Mr. Chair, I guess my question is what have we committed to? I mean, when we start a project, we've made a commitment, and so there's no negotiation about what we're going to stick into it as far as the state is concerned. And I'm just wondering where I can find that on here to say this is committed as part of these federal dollars. So it's not a discretionary item. It's part of a commitment. It's encumbered, right? The encumbered, that would be a better word for it.
Mr. Henkel?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, the best way I can answer this right now, and it may not get exactly to your answer, but what we're committing to is the budget level that we're requesting in total. The federal funds that we're assuming are going to be received is what we will need to be committing to. I'll have to check with my transit expert, unless he has an answer right now, to talk about whether or not the local portion of that is included in any of this analysis.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Mike Schadauer. I'm the director of the Office of Transit at MnDOT. And let me start to answer the question, and you can let me know if I'm not getting at it either. The federal amount that's shown here is exactly as Tim described. It is all federal money. It is our budget authority to spend federal money. So we don't know for sure that we're going to have this much to spend, but we need the authority to spend this if we get discretionary dollars and other things along the way during this biennium. Now, to match that, we have many different federal programs that require different match levels. Some of them are at a 50% level. Some of them are 80% federal, 20% local. So it just varies according to the program under which we get the federal money. We have plenty of money, I guess you could say, in the state and local budgets that Tim was referring to match the amount of federal money that we would expect to get here.
Mr. Schadauer, maybe you could answer this question. On page 80, we have an appendix that lays out the match requirements, potential match requirements for all of the projects that we receive federal funds for. Would that be a good place to start to try to ferret out whether we have an obligation to some of these projects?
Mr. Chair, it's a good way to find out whether a match is necessary. Obviously, it doesn't say the amount of match that's necessary.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hall.
I'm just thinking it might be helpful to know what those encumbered funds are. I mean, I don't think we need to know the specifics on each project. Obviously, that's in the back here. But just the total encumbered funds that we have, so we know that that's not something that we can, you know, that's a minimum funding level if we're going to accept federal funding.
Mr. Chair, Senator Howe, we can try to put something together like that, and I'm sorry for using the word try, but again, we don't know that we're going to get all these federal dollars that are listed
right
here. So what we can do is put together some things about what we do know about so far, what we might anticipate to give you a better picture of what's going on there.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Hankel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll continue to the freight narrative portion of your books, and that would be on page 29. Excuse me. It actually starts on page 28. This activity provides budget for enhancing Minnesota's economic competitiveness by improving access to regional, national, and global markets through the safe and efficient movement of goods. This activity also enhances safety by enhancing the safety and security of our commercial transportation operations and ensuring compliance with state and federal laws. This isn't an appropriation to the state patrol for purposes of enforcement, but we do have staff that are budgeted that do assist in some of the compliance work to ensure that motor vehicles are safe to use the roads. As you look at the services that will be provided by this particular budget area, it starts with the rail and port programs, as included in your narrative. Funding is provided to administer the Minnesota Rail Service Improvement Program, as well as the Port Development Assistance Program, which improves the condition and capacity of rail and port infrastructure in those port or freight rail areas across the state. It also provides for grade crossing safety, where we construct highway rail grade crossing safety improvement projects to enhance safety at public grade crossings in Minnesota. Many of those grade crossings are not directly on the trunk highway system, but maybe on a local road system. But these funds still go to that grade crossing program across the state. Also go to rail-related trunk highway projects to execute the coordination that's necessary and construction agreements with railroads in support of the many trunk highway projects that are occurring across the state. These monies also go to rail safety initiatives, as I said, for conducting the inspections of rail track to ensure compliance with federal and state regulations. Turning to page 29, freight rail planning is also used for this budget to develop plans and information that support an integrated system of freight transportation in Minnesota. Also, overweight truck permitting is one of the larger areas that's staffed within the department, which issues the single trip and annual permits that authorize the movement of oversized and overweight trucks on the trunk highway system and on the interstates, and so that we are protecting the state's infrastructure and ensuring safety on that infrastructure. And finally, a couple of areas also that are budgeted for is motor carrier education, credentialing, and safety evaluations, informational programs, training, technical assistance, educational outreach, administering the credentialing for programs for interstate and interstate motor carrier operations and shippers, as well as the motor carrier safety evaluation, where we conduct the reviews of regulated commercial transportation providers and shippers to ensure that they comply with the safety and hazardous materials regulations of the state and federal government. If you turn to page 31, you have the budget activity summary. It is recommended that the appropriations on the direct side be in the amount of $5,154,000 respectively. in fiscal years 2012 and 2013, and the statutory level recommendation is $11,636,000 annually for a total recommendation of $33,580,000 for the biennium. The spending plan associated with that budget recommendation includes $15 million for capital outlay. I do not believe there, in this case, is any real property acquisition or activity. So I'll just note that here in the amount of $15 million, or about 44% of that budget outlay. This consists primarily of the grade crossing improvement program, those state and federal funds that are required for that particular activity. Remainder of the funding request is to compensation. You'll note that this compensation level seems a little bit higher than you see in some of the other modal activities. This is due to the fact that this particular function receives a higher level of funding through the federal programs to meet the federal requirements for the permitting area. And so there is a significant staffing level that's necessary for issuing and coordinating that permit area within the department. Finally, other operating expenses and local assistance with the percentages laid out there. If there aren't any questions, I'll move to the last modal system activity, which is passenger rail. That can be found on page 32 of your budget narrative. As you can see, this budget area provides for planning and development of passenger rail service in the state of Minnesota. The services that are provided are primarily at this stage the provision of oversight, planning activities, and program development activities for a number of corridor initiatives that is associated with the 2009 general obligation bonds that were provided to MnDOT for purposes of matching federal funds for completing a high-speed rail system in the state of Minnesota connecting to the Midwest passenger rail and national passenger rail system. If you look at page 33 of your budget narrative, you will see the summary of the proposed uses of the 2009 general obligation bonds. As you look at this list, you will see the breakdown that has been agreed to and is approved by the Commissioner of Transportation through the Passenger Rail Forum. As you look at the figures, I'll just note the engineering work for BNSF Northtown was a 2009 activity, and so that is already an expenditure that has been made. As you look at the Twin Cities to Chicago High-Speed Rail Corridor, this is an expenditure that is moving forward currently and will be expended in fiscal year 2011. The direct staff costs associated with NLX is an ongoing activity. Expenditures are moving forward in fiscal year 10 as well as into fiscal year 2011 and maybe into fiscal year 2012. The Northern Lights Express, which is the connection of Duluth to the Twin Cities, is in the environmental process currently, and the $9 million should be budgeted to the NLX project in the near future and will be encumbered in fiscal year 2011 and probably used into fiscal year 2012, depending on the timeline for that next step of that project development activity. That goes for the St. Paul Union Depot as well, which is underway, and those expenditures are expected in fiscal year 2011. The same is for the Minneapolis Transportation Interchange at $3.6 plus million, with those expenditures expected in fiscal year 2011. The Rochester corridor is moving forward in its analysis, but at this point, we don't have a specific fiscal year associated with the expenditure of those funds. Again, the total of $26 million available.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hall.
Mr. Chair, I think especially on this page here, it might be helpful to see what the federal matching funds that are we're going to be spending on these projects. But I'm just wondering, on the Twin Cities of Chicago, is that money for the EIS there?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Hankel.
Senator Howe, that is monies being made available for the service, NEPA. It is the step prior to the environmental analysis required
okay.
by the FRA to narrow alternatives down to a preferred alternative so that we can move into the preliminary engineering and final environmental analysis on a selected corridor. So it's the step prior to that.
Okay, follow-up. So that's the appropriation for the follow-up to determine the route, correct?
Correct.
And so then if we move down to the Rochester corridor, can you tell me what that is going to be used for?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, that will be used for a corridor alignment determination. It will have to look, as the service NEPA is doing in the Chicago to the Twin Cities, for various alternatives for the greenfield alignment, and will determine the feasibility of the corridor that would be preferred so that we can move into the final environmental and preliminary engineering work.
Another follow-up. I'm just wondering why we're spending four times as much money on when we haven't determined which corridor we're going to select.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, the studies are expensive. They're typically done by consultants, and so the amount that's slated here is based upon what it typically costs to be able to do the work to get to those conclusions. And so that amount is being made available for those purposes so that we can get to an understanding of what the preferred alignment and alternative might be in that corridor.
Senator Seaton.
Mr. Chair, just as a follow-up to that, though, isn't it true that we're not clear if that money is totally bondable?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Seaton, that's correct. This request has not gone to Minnesota Management and Budget and the Bond Council for a determination on eligibility. Typically, these funds can only be used for preliminary engineering, final design, and construction activities, and some of the early alternatives work where you're siting a facility has been approved, and so we do not know yet if that's eligible for that purpose.
Hello. Mr. Hankel.
Finalizing the summary of the passenger rail activity, you can see that the appropriations request is in the amount of $500,000 annually, $500,000 annually in fiscal years 2012 and 2013, $1 million total for the biennium. Statutory level requested is 2.5, 465,000, respectively, total of 3 million, or total of 4 million over the biennium. I've pretty much summarized for you the spending plan, which continues the oversight, planning, project delivery activities for those respective corridors identified in the bonding rollout plan over the course of the biennium. With this overall breakdown getting us to the $4 million level. To summarize this, one significant change that Deputy already referred to in the transit budget area, the governor is recommending a proposed reduction of $1.392 million per year to help address the state's general fund deficit. So that would be coming out of the transit general fund appropriation level. It includes an approximate 8.3% reduction in grants to Greater Minnesota transit providers and a 5% reduction to general fund administrative functions in the amount of $49,000. This reduction in Greater Minnesota is associated with a potential change in bus service hours best way for us to give you an equivalent is to talk about fewer hours of bus service. If we assume that the federal funding levels stay consistent, that the local funding levels that are matching the federal funds remain consistent, and we have a reduction of 1.3 plus million of these funds, we can expect approximately 23,000 fewer hours of bus service to be associated with that. As Mr. Schadauer stated earlier, we don't know exactly what that federal funding level will be. If by chance the federal funding were to increase, we may be able to address that general fund reduction and that overall service hour reduction with the federal funds that could fill that gap. This is an assumption based solely on static, local, and federal, and an assumption of a reduction in the general fund appropriation at this level. That concludes the summary of the modal systems, budget activities, the budget requests. I'd stand for any additional questions, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? Well, thank you, Mr. Hankel. Appreciate your presentation.
I don't see the deputy, Mr. Chairman, so I believe he had lined up next Mr. Rick Jonas from the State Aid Office, who will continue the MnDOT briefing with a review of the county state aid program area.
You're on your own, it looks like, Mr. Jones. Welcome to the committee.
Typical. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
There you are.
Where's that passion?
Mr. Jones.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for having me here again today. And today we're going into the state aid division as far as local roads discussion, our office, what we do, and the money that we handle on behalf of the counties and cities and townships. The slide up on the wall there talks about our activities and our services, and I'm looking at page 63 from your handouts there. The county state aid activity, as opposed to the municipal state aid activity, it deals with the 29% of the highway user tax distribution fund. We talked about that at an earlier hearing. Those monies are apportioned then once we receive them out to individual counties according to formulas prescribed by law and in working in conjunction with the county's screening board and their advice. Those monies are apportioned out in January, and we just did that in the last few weeks here, determined the amounts for calendar year. Counties work in a calendar year, and cities do too. There are 2011 apportionments. There are 30,546 miles of county state aid highways. The activities that we work on, we supervise the distribution of the funds, as I just described. We also administer grants and authorize grants for bridge construction. That would include bridge bonding when it's available. We provide technical assistance in the area of design, construction, and maintenance as requested and as required by law and rules. We promulgate rules and procedures for managing the system that are developed by the counties themselves through their rule and standards committees. And we administer grants and loans for the local road improvement program. It's worth noting that the county state aid highway system, as far as a measurement of age, is continuing to age. And by looking at, we use 50 years as our measuring stick for the counties. There are 70 miles of road that have increased in age beyond 50 years in age. That's faster than the counties are rebuilding them. If you took the 30,546 miles of road divided by 50, you would come up with how many miles they should be rebuilding on a year to keep their system at the same condition that it is now. The fact that they have built less than the aging number, 70 more miles have fallen into the poor condition. As far as our services, we break them down into our administration work, which is basically data handling, the database for their need system, any of their accident records, any other records that they want kept centrally for them or that is necessary for doing business with them. We, in our investment services, that's actually our state aid dollars as it passed through. We also oversee those monies and the maintenance of the system, make sure that projects are built in accordance with standards and constructed in accordance with standards. We provide oversight to the federal aid program in our federal aid services area. We also have other money that goes through our office and not showing up exactly in our budget, such as the state park road account and the town road account and the town bridge account. We are involved in distributing those monies out to the counties and providing oversight to those programs to some extent, much lesser extent. Looking at page 64, as far as our key activities, we work closely with the counties and cities to help them in educating and better managing their system and working closer together between themselves and with MnDOT. We also provide the technical support for them that they keep up with the so-called state-of-the-art or the challenges of working in today's economy on better taking care of their roads. In the middle of the page there, the age of the system goes into a little bit more detail to what I described earlier about how their system is aging. And we are actually working with them right now on testing portions of their roads, the major roads by county, trying to measure their smoothness and their strength and identifying potential what is some people are calling secondary truck route systems for Minnesota's economy. It's also called the 10-ton system. The federal funds that the counties compete at the ATPs are administered through our office. Our office also administers the Tiger grants that locals have received in this last year. City of Staples received a Tiger's grant, and also Union Depot received some funds, and our office is working with Ramsey County on those funds, and they're flowing through our budget. On page 65, the paragraph there is making mention of the what is loosely called the turnback account. It's also called the flexible account. It's existed in its current form since 1998, although there was a change made in 2008 in eliminating the trunk highway improvements from being eligible to receive monies directly. They can receive monies if there is a written agreement in place that the road will be turned back after MnDOT fixes the roads, if that's what the agreement required in order to get a turn back to take place. But there is, in the metro area, about a 6 or 7 year backlog of turn back projects at the level of funding we sit right now. And in the rural area, there's about a 3 year backlog in those programs. We're working with locals to make that workable for them. The slide here shows the spending. The local assistance is the pass-through dollars, both federal and state, that we manage. The operating expenses are monies that are spent by our office on behalf of counties and cities to do either research or studies or to provide copies of manuals or training classes. The compensation are the salaries of the state aid employees, both in St. Paul and throughout the state that work in the state aid division. As you can see, 90% of the money that we received is passed through. The other operating expenses and the total compensation is derived for us to use 2% of the state aid dollars that flow through. We reserve those back for running the office and spend those as needed. Generally, we do not need all of that, but that's what we receive. And then the federal dollars and the bonding dollars, there is no administration cost from that. It's all taken out of the money we take from the state aid dollars. That would be the county, the municipal, very similar situation there. starting from the fact that the municipal state aid is 9% of the highway user tax distribution, and it's distributed to cities in population over 5,000. There's 147 cities currently that are participating in distribution of funds with a total mileage of 3,561 miles. That system is growing. The number of cities is growing, and the dollars per block, per mile, per city are decreasing, and the cities are showing some concern for that. Dina, Byron, and Zimmerman were added this year. Similarly, the activities are similar to what we do on the county side. Supervising a distribution of funds, the formulas that the cities use are different. We also administer their grants for them, provide technical assistance to them. They have their, they participate in the rulemaking process along with the counties, although they do have their own separate rules and standards to some extent. They work in conjunction with the counties where they can and differ where they need to. And then we administer loans and grants from the local road improvement program and the state bridge replacement bonding program. As far as our services, again, we have the administration services of managing the databases and the investment services where we provide the technical assistance and oversight of their management of their road systems and their construction plans and the maintenance of their roads in accordance with their rules and with statutes. On page 68, we can see that the cities are aging too. They should be, as far as the age of the system, 87 miles of road need to be rebuilt each year, and currently they're rebuilding 50 miles per year, so they're falling behind also. So that is a matter of some concern. We have a number of studies working with cities on what's a responsible way to deal with that, knowing that money isn't going to be the answer in every single case here to deal with something costly as it would be to keep the entire state aid system at its current level of system and with the increasing levels of traffic and weights of trucks. The last paragraph on page 68 talks about the cities are also involved in the turnback program, although to a much lesser extent. But there are turnbacks. Right now there's a large one in the Rochester area that is being negotiated. There are other turnbacks in the metro area throughout the state that are in the city area, but most of the trunk highway turnbacks are to the counties. There is no backlog in the city area, and so as those are negotiated, we pretty well take care of them as the opportunity presents themselves. The dollar amounts on the next slide show much the same as I had before. Of the $307 million for the coming biennium that we're anticipating receiving, based on current levels of funding with some growth as forecast by the November forecast, $299 million would be conveyed directly to the cities, and $8 million would be left back for salaries and providing services directly for them in the administration of their program. Mr. Chair, that concludes this report. Stand for questions.
Are there any questions from the committee?
Chair,
Senator Sundrum.
In a turnback situation, and you referred to Rochester, and I'm not familiar with that one, but is that usually prompted by the city wanting to take over a roadway, or is it the state wanting to get rid of one?
Mr. Jones.
Or both?
Mr. Chair, Senator, both would be the correct answer. The roads that... Well, first starting to take a global look at it, the counties recently did a global look at the Minnesota highway system, and they noted that there are
most of the arterial functional class roads are on the trunk highway system. Most of the collector roads are on the county system, as one might expect if you knew and understood the how the functional classifications sit up. The higher functional class roads should be on the higher unit of government. But there are 1,000 miles of arterial road that are on the county system. Probably they've evolved to a higher use while on that system, and things have changed. Whereas on the state highway system, there are 100 miles of 1,000 miles of collector roads. Those 1,000 miles of collector on the trunk highway system or 1,000 miles of arterial on the county system would be candidates for possible turnbacks. Not every one, but they would be an indicator of the level of potential turnbacks that could be out there. But as a matter of practice, when I mentioned the backlogs, we're looking at several hundred miles, maybe 300-400 miles, where right now MnDOT districts and locals have either entered into an agreement, a memorandum of understanding, or are negotiating on an agreement to make a change. Some of those changes would be like where Trunk Highway 14 was moved to a new alignment and old Trunk Highway 14 should be put into local jurisdiction. That's your traditional turnback. And I would say 50% of our activity currently is of that type, where there's been a new alignment and the old alignment needs to go back. And then the other is where the road has decreased in importance to the state, and it's becoming difficult for the state to keep up with the expenses, and the locals feel that they are better equipped and it would be better on their system. They agree, and they make a request, and there's discussions had. And, of course, money from the turnback does help facilitate the agreement. But parties usually come and approach us, and there's no active effort on anybody's part to go out and actually solicit or force turnbacks. They just seem to the local community seems to be questioning why this is a state highway and raising the question, and then grassroots discussion brings it to the table. And with the backlog and everything, it's kind of working at that level, and I anticipate it working that way for the foreseeable future.
Can you enlighten us as to the process of what MnDOT goes through to turn back a road, like, say, that short piece of Highway 14 that you're talking about? Is there a set standard that you bring the road up to before you turn it back? And is that standard in statute? Is it just policy? Is there some adjustment or ability to possibly reduce the criteria that would allow us to eke up some of those turnbacks?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's a very good question. Statute gives us primary guidance on how the negotiation is to take place, and the 14 negotiation is currently underway now. They're taking place. I believe you're from Wilmer, and a few years ago I was in Wilmer at the state facility there, where there was a piece of trunk highway that was turned back to the city there. And the road needs to be in an acceptable condition. And for example, the road that in Wilmer was a very low use road, and so the condition to be the road needed to be in order for the city to be willing to take the road over, good driving service and the potholes patched, and everything in order, the ditches cleaned out, new culverts if necessary. Whereas 14, they're gonna still be anticipating some traffic there, and they're gonna want the road to be in having a reasonable amount of remaining life on that road. Statute says that the road should be in reasonable to good condition for the present traffic. That differentiates with what a county would do when they decide to rebuild a road and they forecast what the traffic would be 20 years from now and when they would be regrading to that. So when a road is turned back, if the county's decision is to rebuild a road for the 20-year forecasted traffic and 10 tons and fix the ditches all up and go to that, the turnback account will not pay for 100% of the costs. It pays, and this is not, sometimes a little bit difficult to exactly calculate, but if parties are willing to negotiate and if they are driven to agree, the cost of making sure that the road is in good enough condition for today's use can be evaluated, keeping in mind that it's not going to be 100% of the cost of the reconstruction, some lesser portion. There is no exact formula for that. If there is a MnDOT plan for repair projects in the upcoming years, those can be referred to, and money that MnDOT had planned to expend on those roads can be made available to facilitate that the locals can maintain the road to the same condition that MnDOT would have. That can be a good guidance, but each one is unique. We're finding more and more frequently right now that the locals and everybody finds more convenient that decisions are made as I just described, and cost estimates are developed, and in the end the agreement is written up, and the final settlement is a check, the lump sum payment, as opposed to the work actually getting done, because the local will look at the road and say, okay, I understand, but it makes no sense to tear up this road right now. We'll do that 10 years from now, and we'll do it the way we want to at that time. So the basis of agreement amounts ends up with an amount of money that changes hands, and everybody agrees.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Perry?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With that in mind, does the local unit then get the funds up front? And if they do, are they designated so that they cannot be used for anything but that upgrade, so that down the road or between day one and year 10, when they really need to, that money's going to be there? Is there any control over those dollars so that they're not spent, say, on something else?
Mr. Jones?
Mr. Chair, Senator, that's a very good question. As a deputy commissioner mentioned earlier, each agreement is unique, and each local agency is different. They've got their priorities, and it's not our intention to tie their hands or dictate how they spend their funds. The agreement arrives in amount of money, and they're assuming all responsibility for the road and the complaints and the care that would go with it. If they choose to take this check and use it in some other way on their highway department, they would usually have that methodology. There has been cases where the local situations have dictated, maybe the area residents, I want to hold their county commissioners' feet to the fire a little bit, that they've wanted the money escrowed in some fashion, either in one of our accounts or locally in one of their accounts. And we'd respect that, but that would be driven by a local desire.
Okay, thank you. Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair. A slightly different subject, kind of back to county state aid and municipal state aid. Can you help us understand what the mix of resources? I know that county state aid dollars don't pay for all of the capital and operational needs of a county highway. Likewise with the municipal arterials. I remember, for example, when I worked for Minneapolis, with the municipal state aid streets, there was a mix of local sources, both city general fund and assessments. What standard is there? Is there a standard kind of local and state participation expectation or formula or match, anything like that? Or is it variable from county to county and city to city? How do we think about that?
Mr. Jones.
Mr. Chair, Senator, that does vary. It varies between counties and cities, and it varies between cities and among the counties. The actual state aid dollars can be 100% on a project for participating items. There are things that like water and sewer improvements that go along with the highway construction, which are not state aid eligible. So many projects have work on them that we cannot fund with state aid. So under the terms of the contract, there will be a local cost. Things like sidewalks vary from community to community, how they handle those. They could be eligible new sidewalks for state aid, but some cities choose to make them a special assessment item, as well as curb and gutter. That can be a community choice. We make them eligible, but we don't tell them how to do business. As I mentioned, the road conditions are going backwards as far as the age of the system is aging. The local effort that each community is using as far as applying property tax dollars to help keep that up, and how they're choosing to spend that on their system, or if they're picking roads to concentrate on, or if they're trying to work on trying to keep their whole system. Most recently, there seems to be quite a bit of discussion around the state about turning roads back to gravel. Actually, I know of no case where that's been done in the state right now on any significant scale. But to hear conversations like that, locals are trying to avoid that, and the local effort to do that is there. Locals compete for federal dollars. Some are more successful than others in doing that, and, of course, a stimulus program. So in those dollars there, you're looking at, I'd say, about one-third, maybe a little bit less, maybe one-fourth of the dollars that are passing through on the county side are federal, and the rest are state aid dollars. The part that we don't have a measurement here is how many local dollars are going into there. At the last time I appeared before this committee, there was two county engineers, and I believe one was talking about a local levy very comparable to the state aid dollars. The other county was talking about local contributions significantly more than state aid dollars when he included the cost participation being required on municipalities and also on developers, and adding those dollars into getting their system where they wanted it to go, because Dakota County, that was a growing county, and so they needed significantly more to meet their goals than what state aid dollars would provide.
Oh, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks. Mr. Jonas, can you just remind us quickly, both for old money and new money, what the CASA formula, what the variables are, what the factors are in the formula?
Yes.
Mr. Jonas.
Mr. Chair, Senator.
I think I'd have it memorized, but I don't.
In the old money, which is the sources of money that existed prior to 2008 and any growth occurred to those, 50% is based on their needs, 30% on their lane miles, 10% on vehicles registered within that county, and 10% of the total pot equally to all the counties. With the new sources of money that were created in the legislation in 2008, the formula just focuses on two areas. 60% is the needs formula as determined by the screening board, and then vehicle registration is the other 40% of the money. People have tried to speculate old money, new money, and what's the future. I can tell you that this year everybody is well pleased by the fact that both the old money and the new money grew by 9% plus or minus a percent or so. There was growth in both accounts, which has been a good thing as far as making the county distribution satisfactory and continuing to seem fair among the counties and that coalition that came up with this formula.
So just one tiny
Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So just can you tell us what are the factors that go into determining need?
Mr. Chair, that's a long question, Mr. Senator, but in simplistic terms, especially the definition of money needs in the statute and in the rules is it talks about rebuilding the roads of the state aid system from their condition as they exist today to a new standard over a period of 50 years and what that annual cost would be. So there is reporting required by every city and county that's on the state aid system as to what is that present condition of their road today, and what standard would they rebuild to if they rebuilt today. And those total money needs are totaled up and compared with everybody else's, so there becomes a factor then, your percentage of needs as compared to everybody else. It's annualized then to a annual money needs, and that's the calculation. There is an effort going on to simplify the reporting and the calculations, but the theory and the process would remain the same. But the it would the construction methods have changed so much in the last few years that some of the things that we're doing right now are difficult to compute under our current process. So we're looking at updating the way we calculate our money needs within the next few years.
Senator Lilly.
Mr. Chair, and this question is for Deputy Commissioner Arsenault. I understand that this is a preliminary view for this committee of this budget. We just received it in our hands. But just a clarification or an initial reaction from myself would be road construction appropriations increasing, state planning and research increasing, DBE, new programs, armor maintenance and operations. This is a permanent increase in base funding. General fund is being reduced, and that's busing. That's local service to people who need it most, and I don't want to go through the whole program. But if I turn to the last page, the very back page of the packet, overall budget, agency total revenue, will go from $958 million to $1.53 billion in this budget. A 20% increase in the budget in this year. And if I understand that correctly, we are asking the families of Minnesota, the businesses of Minnesota, those who are paying the taxes, to increase their support of transportation 20%. Transportation is critically important to the businesses and families of our state. We need to invest in it. But if I were running this as a business, if I received this budget from one of my department heads, I would ask them to revisit this, to come back to it, and come back with a number that we can support. This budget, this overall budget, concerns me to see that size of growth. And that would just be my comments, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Arsenault, would you like to take a stab at that one?
Mr. Chair and Senator Lilly, I note that you referenced a couple of the change items, and those are related to just allowing us to spend the additional federal dollars that come our way. We also struggle with the Greater Minnesota Transit grant reduction. This is where we are. We recognize our role in helping to address the state budget deficit, and so we know that there's work to do in that area. I'll also say that because of the nature of highway funding through the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund and the fact that that's dedicated to the trunk highway system and the fact that there are a great deal of needs on that system, and that's how this all kind of ends up where it is. So, I mean, we agree that there's a lot of work to do. We'll continue to work with the governor and the legislature as we move forward here. So.
One quick
question.
Mr. Chair, just one quick question on the turnback. What protections or are there any protections built into this turnback provision where we turn it back and the money gets spent not on that road, but are there any protections for landowners or building owners, adjacent property owners to that roadway, that they won't be assessed, the cost of reconstruction? If a county or a city has received a sizable amount from the state, is there any protections put into that contract?
Mr. Jones?
Chair, Senator, I believe the answer to your question is no, not as far as the turnback agreement itself is concerned. That would be something that between the landowners and their local elected officials, and if that was a major concern on a particular highway, I would think that the local landowners would be voicing the concern as the turnback negotiations were taking place.
Okay. Follow up. So, are the Mr. Chair, are the local landowners or property owners notified of a turnback?
Mr. Jones.
Mr. Chair, Senator, only in the proceedings of the local elected officials, typically. The many of the turnbacks do require legislation. If they are statutory routes, and I believe there are a few that are going to be coming through your body this year, where the roads are trunk highways as a matter of statute, and it'll require legislative action to change that, delete that reference in the statutes before things can take place. And it's been a matter of policy that the legislature has asked for support from local agencies before they want the law brought to them for consideration. But otherwise, as far as the district engineers negotiating with the local engineers and getting resolutions from the county and city boards, it would just be local business.
Thank you.
Being no further questions and no further business before the committee, we are adjourned.